This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some men and women around you who have pretty remarkable stories, and it sure is amazing to hear them. Each week, we visit with veterans of World War II. We want to honor them for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, boy, do we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, we're inspired by these stories, and I know that'll be the case today. If nothing else, you've got to get on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and see the picture of these newlyweds that are celebrating their 71st anniversary. You're not going to believe they're even 71 years old. I'm telling you, check out the photo. And let's hear the voice of 91-year-old Eugene Mould, Army Air Corps veteran from World War II, with a really unique story about what you did during the war. I've heard a lot of different jobs from different servicemen on this program, but never someone who did exactly what you did. But let's start earlier on, before we get to your fly-in days. Growing up in the East Bay, before World War II, what was your childhood like? What kinds of things were you up to or dreaming of as a young boy?
I was active in activities in high school, sports, journalism, orchestra, student government.
You did it all?
I did a lot of things, yes.
And this was Diablo Union High School?
Mount Diablo Union High School in Concord.
Uh-huh. What was your best sport?
Basketball. I was all of 5'8".
It's not the size of the dog in the fight.
Yeah.
And you said orchestra. What instrument did you play?
I played violin.
Uh-huh. A man of many talents.
Thank you.
And when did you first encounter a young lady named Anita?
When we were in high school, she was a sophomore. I was a senior.
Uh-huh.
And she asked for the first date.
Oh, so I can't call you a cradle robber. No, it was the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it your basketball prowess or your musical talents that you think brought her over?
I think it was my good looks.
Well, judging by the fact that you still fit into your Army Air Corps jacket 70 years later, that must have something to do with it. And maybe some folks are recognizing your voice. Maybe you have some of your former math students in Modesto schools, or maybe you were their principal at Modesto High School, and they're saying, oh, Mr. Mould, good to hear you again. But maybe they haven't heard your stories from the war. One question that I like to ask everybody, because everyone seems to remember something. December 7th, 1941, where were you, and how did you hear that Japan had attacked Pearl Harbor?
I don't remember how I got the news. I was a carry-out clerk at Safeway stores in Concord, yes.
Uh-huh. You're carrying grocery bags out to people's cars?
Yes, correct.
And you were doing that Sunday?
Yes, I was, yes. I'm not sure I knew what it meant. I don't think I understood the consequences.
When did that hit home for you?
Sometime when I began my own training to be a bomber pilot.
Well, where did that come from? What made you want to be a bomber pilot? Or maybe you wanted to be a fighter pilot?
No, I wanted to be a bomber pilot. I enlisted in the Army Air Corps and when I was a sophomore at UC Berkeley. I got called to active duty in March of 43.
Mm-hmm. I've heard stories about the Bay Area in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor. And I've heard people talk about blackouts and having to turn off all the lights at night, fears that the Japanese were going to bomb San Francisco. Do you remember any of that tension at the time?
Yeah, my father was a warden on the street we lived to monitor lights out when necessary.
What would he do if they didn't?
I don't know.
You don't know what his big threat was? Huh?
I don't have a recollection on that one.
What would he do to you if you left your light on?
Yeah.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have two older sisters and a younger brother.
So you're the first one from your family to join this war effort?
Yes, I was. Yes.
So what was it about the Army Air Corps and bombers specifically that sounded like something you wanted to do?
Well, you know, we all, at that age, we all knew we were subject to the draft. So the smart thing to do was to enlist so you could get the branch of service that you wanted. And I had just decided, for whatever reason, the Army Air Corps.
Had you ever flown a plane before?
No.
Had you ever flown in a plane before?
Once, as a child.
Uh-huh.
Don't remember much about it.
So this was just a whole new world for you.
Yes, exactly.
And I think everybody could tell already that, you know, if you're 91 years old and you're so mentally sharp and you're a math teacher and a principal, you're a pretty smart guy. A lot of times I talk to people that were in the Army Air Corps, and one of the big challenges was some of the academic work that they had to do and the courses they had to take, the things they had to understand. Was any of that challenging for you?
Not academically. I struggled a little bit with Morse code. We had to pass a test on that, and eventually I did, but it wasn't my strong area.
How did that test work? What did you have to do?
We had to record messages sent by teletype and then record them on paper.
So that was a little nerve-wracking?
I just didn't pick it up as rapidly as some others.
Hard to separate the diff from the da and all that.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you passed it.
Thank you.
What was it like the first time that you got to fly, that you got up in the air and felt yourself at the controls?
Well, you know, it was a very good experience. It was a primary trainer. It was an open cockpit, instructor in the back, a pilot in the front, wear a helmet and goggles, no radio.
Mm-hmm. A little different than how it goes today, huh?
Yeah, quite a bit, yeah.
Did you ever wonder, am I doing the right thing here? Did I make the right choice?
No, I was confident that I was where I wanted to be and should be.
Uh-huh. The first time that you got to fly a B-17, what was that like?
The first bomber I flew was a B-24.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's the biggest airplane going at that time.
Yeah.
A lot of power. 4 engines each, 1,200 horsepower. Had to have a co-pilot and a flight engineer.
Well, and you said the plane had a lot of power. From what I've heard from B-24 pilots, the pilot had to have a fair amount of strength to get that puppy off the ground and to control it.
Yes, we did. Yeah, it wasn't power assist like they have these days. So if you lost an engine on one side or 2 engines on one side, you needed a lot of strength to keep the airplane headed the way you wanted it to.
Mm-hmm. Did I have it wrong? Were you flying B-24s, not B-17s over there?
I flew both. No, you had it
okay,
right. I flew
okay.
both.
All right.
Yeah, I flew about half my missions in each each aircraft.
So you flew both the B-17 and the B-24, mm-hmm. and I've been hearing for years from B-24 pilots over here and B-17 pilots over here saying, my plane's better than your plane. No, my plane's better than your plane. And you flew them both. So where do you fall in that holy war?
I fall slightly on the side of the B-24 because that was my initial training.
Mm-hmm.
But the B-17 was a better airplane for climbing than the B-24.
Got it. So you said you want to be a bomber pilot. I'm sure you envisioned going over there and dropping bombs with little messages to Hitler written on them, right?
No, I had no idea I would be assigned to that kind of a squadron. Yeah.
No, I meant literally bombs, you know, why you paint Hitler on the side or something like that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
thought you'd be dropping actual bombs,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
I'm sure you trained in regular bombers, right?
Yes. The planes we flew were the same as the ones that dropped explosives.
Right.
Just had different cargo, different kinds of bombs.
Very different kinds of bombs, and we're going to learn all about that. Throughout that training, because, you know, I always talk to veterans about their missions and combat and the different things they experienced there. But I've had a lot of guys that tell me some really interesting stories about the training and that we kind of take for granted that, you know, training happens and people get through it and it's no big deal. But there are a lot of people that died in training. There are a lot of people that didn't make it through training. Was there anything throughout that training period that sticks out in your memory that was either difficult or noteworthy for you?
No, it was pretty routine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No tragedies that I recall, at least. So. Mm-hmm.
Was it exciting for you to do this kind of work?
It was exciting, and at the same time, it was just what you did. You were assigned, and you did it.
Mm-hmm. And when did you head overseas?
July of 44.
Mm-hmm. You got to fly over?
I flew a B-24 from Marin County to the East Coast to Iceland to England.
The northern route, huh?
Yeah. So I'm a transcontinental pilot with one flight.
In a B-24.
In a B-24.
Not too many people can claim that. Were you a little nervous or anxious heading over there, not knowing what to expect?
No, I don't remember being nervous, no.
You were ready to get into it?
Yeah. When we got to Iceland, the weather was good, so we didn't have much of a stay there. So I was tired a little bit on the flight to England, but I don't remember being nervous.
Mm-hmm. When was it that you found out that you would be dropping different kinds of bombs, that your missions, that your assignment would be different than your typical bomber?
Yeah, when I got to England. Mm-hmm. Didn't know before that.
So none of your crew knew?
Correct.
So how did that all come about?
We were just assigned, that's all. You know, we had no say in it. Nobody consulted with us. We were assigned, and okay, that's what we're going to do.
Was there a little head scratching? First of all, tell us what this cargo, what these bombs, quote-unquote bombs, were, and how that news was broken to you.
Well, the airbase where we were, that's what they did. So we found out we were a night leaflet squadron, and we airplanes we flew were painted black. We had 10 huge bombs stuffed with leaflets, and we would put two or three on each target or city in one mission.
Mm-hmm. Did you even know that that idea existed, that that was happening in the war?
No, I didn't know that. And I found out probably after I completed my missions, we were part of the Secret Service, but nobody told us that.
Uh-huh.
Probably for good reason, so so we wouldn't know. We were instructed not to look at leaflets.
Uh-huh.
So they were in German, so it was kind of a moot point. But in case we were shot down, then we didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I just caught myself here. I skipped something. There was a pretty significant development for you before you headed overseas, wasn't there?
Yeah, my wife and I got married 3 months before I went overseas.
Was that a difficult decision for you? Because I've talked to a lot of guys who did that, and I've also talked to a lot of them and said, hey, I wanted to wait to make sure I came back before I got married.
No, we just decided, okay, we don't want to wait. We want to be married. And so we had about 3 months of marriage, and then I left for overseas.
Mm-hmm. How hard was that to leave behind this?
That was tough.
Yeah.
That was tough, yeah.
You don't strike me as an overly sentimental guy. Am I reading you right?
Yeah, probably.
But did you find yourself wondering, am I ever going to see her again?
Yeah, that crossed your mind. But the other thing was, if you're going to fly a mission that night, your name with your crew was on the bulletin board, and you said, okay, I'm going to fly a mission.
No big deal.
Yeah, yeah, just do it.
Did you carry a photo of her with you on your mission?
She sent me a photo that I treasure. Still have, of course.
Still have it?
Yeah.
And where did you keep it while you're over there?
Next to my bunk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So they tell you you're in this night leaflet squadron, which you've never heard of before.
Right.
And that you're going to be dropping bombs, but there's no explosives in them.
Right.
Just propaganda.
Propaganda. Certificates guaranteeing German soldiers safe conduct through the lines, food, and medical care if they would surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And the intelligence people told us it worked.
Mm-hmm.
They did come through the lines. So it was a way of saving lives.
But at the time, you didn't even know what was written on there.
No, still don't.
How much did they tell you at the time?
I don't remember any information about what was on the leaflets. Some of the time, because communications broke down, like for Holland, we would fly the news to them. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Battle of the Bulge is when Hitler said, we're going to push you off the continent. When that didn't happen, great psychological advantage for the Allies. So we flew a lot after the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if people were listening closely enough, they heard night leaflet squadron. So most B-17 pilots did the bulk of their flying during daylight hours, B-24 pilots, same thing. You did all your flying at night?
Yes. Took off at dusk.
And before you went overseas, had you had any experience in night flying?
Some, but not unusual, not more than anybody else, you know.
So how did you feel about that?
It was all right, you know. It's what we were assigned to do, like I'm repeating myself. That's what we did.
Yeah, for 43 missions, all alone in the dark of night. And we're going to explore some of those missions and hear about some of the close calls when we come back. If you want to see Mr. Mold putting on his Army Air Corps dress jacket that still fits after 70 years, visit the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. a sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.